This show is a member of Goblin, the gaming broadcast network, gbncom.com.
Haven Podcast, a gaming podcast for game masters of all gaming systems. So grab your dice bags and we'll get your game on.
Well, hello everyone out there in internet land. We're back with the Gamers Haven Podcast.
And we've painted the whole place green!
Got sick of the gray.
Why did you pick green?
I don't know. You picked green.
Because it's nausea-inducing.
It's like Hulk green now, so it's not bad.
Oh, okay. Could be worse.
I think it's
could
to be. Hide, you know, any sort of...
So what am I supposed to do with this dinosaur you got for me?
You said you wanted a dinosaur.
It's true, I did.
So it's up to you what you want to do with the dinosaur.
Just keep it locked in the room for now.
No. I'm going to set him loose. All dinosaurs should be free.
Born free.
What kind of dinosaur did you get him, by the way?
Oh, it was some Utah raptor thing. I don't know.
Sweet.
Oh, jeez. I've already gotten the
beam lock from him. The door.
Oh, he's already used the elevator. He's... Something about...
He used the chute?
Oh, damn it! That was next to the elevator, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Where does that chute go?
Surface.
Oh, okay, good.
Oh,
I thought it was the other chute.
That's what I've been sending Paul up for.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
It goes up the chute.
I thought you were talking about the trash chute.
No, that goes down into the geothermal pad.
Yeah, I think the raptor had some, like,
single-handedly keeping the Earth's core hot.
I think he had a bag that said something along the lines of, like, New York or bust.
Oh, God.
Cool. I did kind of enhance his intelligence.
So let me guess, we're the whole reason why they make those crappy-ass movies called Carnosaur.
Yeah. I did awaken him, though, so he's a little bit more intelligent.
I mean, hey, we do have a Mansquito.
And I gave him a hat.
That's your own fault.
As well as your cell phone number.
Well, the Mansquito was here when we got here.
My cell phone rings and he calls me. I am so going to hurt you.
I gave him some money, too. Not the money we use.
Not the Quatloos?
But the real money.
Okay, that you got for the Batmobile?
Yeah.
Excellent. Did Batman ever show up for that?
We're not going to talk about that. And if anybody knocks at the door, don't answer.
Okay. We have a door?
We do. You
put in a door.
It goes to multiple places.
Yeah, that poor Neanderthal cool. family that was living next door.
We're just taking all of our neighbors over. It's funny. There's underground
apes,
the bug people, the mole men.
What, we have mole men?
Yeah,
we had
mole men.
We had mole men.
They were very tasty.
We ate the mole men?
Well, you did too.
We roasted them with that radioactive grill thing you made.
Oh, that's what they were.
Yeah. That's what that meat was. Pretty good.
Yeah, tasty stuff. Too bad they're all extinct now, but, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
We could clone them just to eat them again.
Well, I always take DNA from everything.
So, yeah. We're all set.
So we still have primitive Neanderthal DNA?
Yeah.
Sweet.
I'm going to cross it with the raptor DNA and see what happens.
And then there's those paper mache monsters again.
Yeah, those... Why don't you color those?
Well, you keep stealing the color, remember?
That's right. I could stop that, actually. You could have your color back.
I know you're trying to build those pinatas, dude. Come on.
What was that game again?
Viva Pinata.
Yeah, Viva Pinata.
Oh, that's great.
What are we talking about today?
We are talking about religion.
Mythology.
And faith in worlds that we build and how that is important and...
Whether
it's important.
And how important you want to make it, et cetera. So, excellent. Well, we'll be back after these short messages, and we'll dive into it.
Maybe. Just maybe my boys can stop me from getting the book. Yeah. Maybe I'm a Chinese jet pilot.
Podcasting from their secret satellite headquarters.
Dude, it's your kitchen.
Three friends gather around the dais of discourse,
like at your mom's kitchen table.
Do battle boredom and bash finality.
Armed with only a fistful of comics and games.
Okay, Night Ranger, it looks like you've angered the Kobold Shaman, and he's about to cast a spell at you. What do you do?
Is he wearing boots?
What does that have to do with anything?
Well, it might cause arcane spell failure.
Okay, yes, he's wearing high hard leather boots.
Well, in that case, I'll attack with my longsword.
Okay, roll to hit.
13.
That's a miss.
Working man?
What is it, Tangent? Can't you see that we're playing Keep on the Borderlands?
Well, I don't want to interrupt you, but we just got an urgent email from the Inker from Mutant Warrior Base on the planet Zargon, and he wants to know what our podcast is all about. What do you want me to tell him?
Well, tell him that we're a roundtable discussion with a revolving cast.
Okay, I've got that. Now what?
Well, tell him that we have topics about comics, games, and other related media, like TV, movies, and novels.
Okay, I've got that.
Well, don't forget to tell him about our comics, gaming, and sci-fi convention coverage.
Well, yeah, and our interviews with game and comic creators.
Yeah, sounds like everything he needs to get his geek on.
Well, I'll just finish up by saying that you can reach us at www.fistfulofcomics.com.
That's great. Now can we get back to our game?
Well, I want to keep you.
Okay, great. All right, so he finishes casting his spell, and he fires a magic missile at you. Take 3 points of damage.
But I have boots on.
Robo, excuse me, Robo. Any special message for all the kids watching at home?
Stay out of trouble.
All right, well, we're back from those wonderful messages. And like we said in the intro, we're talking about religion and mythology in your games, as well as faith. And we're not talking about real-world stuff, obviously. We're talking about in-game, you know, in-game faith. And I think predominantly this applies mostly towards fantasy settings, but it can also go towards science fiction. I mean, heck, look at Star Wars and The Force, you know.
And how important is it to the world that you're creating?
Right, right.
Some worlds, the gods play such an important role that it's kind of a travesty not to have clerics and faith play an important role
right.
in the actual game.
It's along the lines of like Greek mythology, you know, where the gods are very meddlesome and they're very much handed have hands in the mortal pie.
Yeah, and it depends on, do you want them just to be meddlesome and troublesome? Are they helpful? You have to look at, when you play a cleric or a priest, it's pretty easy just to have a generic, I worship Pelor, or I worship such and such. Well, that's fine and dandy, but what does that mean? For character depth. Not to mention, it's a lot neater to have the I don't know, the Church of Eternal Sunlight
mm-hmm.
instead of the Church of Pelor.
Right, right. I mean, it's how in depth you want to go into it. And, well, let's talk really quick about like creating the gods, creating the pantheon, because that's actually where do you start with that? I mean, I had to create some gods for my fantasy setting, and I initially used the gods, just the base gods out of the D&D book, but I added on some more. I would recommend, as far as designing a god, is, you know, design it off an aspect of something. Research and look at some of the old mythologies, like Egyptian mythology, Greek mythology, Norse mythology, Chinese mythology, anything like that, and you can get an idea of the types of things people would have worshipped, and then sort of add in a god that would basically look at the same sort of thing, like the sun, the moon, the stars, you know, life, death, love, anything like that.
Important aspects, things that affect life. And I mean, you could use the deities out of just the D&D deities. There's nothing mm-hmm. wrong with that at all.
You could use the deities from Norse mythology yeah. or any, you know, Greek mythology, anything like that. It's all up to you, ultimately.
Deities and Demigods is a good book. It's kind of out of date right now, but it is a good book. And it talks about a lot of the gods. Now, if you get a hold of the second edition, Legends of Lore and Deities and Demigods, that even has some of the Aztec ones in
mm-hmm.
it. So it really depends on what type of culture you're going for. I've even heard people, there's actually Testament plays.
Testament from Green Notice Publishing, Green right.
They have, I mean, I don't know how much they touch on religion.
It's actually a common misnomer as far as that game is. It's a biblical era.
Role-playing
game. I mean, you don't find stats in there for Jesus. You don't find stats in there for Jehovah.
But
you know
that
what I mean?
Type of thing might be touched upon. We're not talking about stats.
Right. But what it talks about mostly is what that is historical look, is a historical game. Set in the biblical
good.
Era. I have it. It's a very good book.
That brings up, if you play a game in that era, that could get into
mm-hmm.
the religious thing.
Yeah, you don't even have to think in terms of like Greek, Roman mythology, things like that. You could think in terms of the Jewish faith,
Jewish faith,
and having a pantheon or a what's the term for multiple deities? It's a
polytheistic
society. I haven't played Civ 4 in a long time. you have a monotheistic society, and also the big thing too in a fantasy setting, and I'm always sort of looking at is the one culture doesn't necessarily worship the same gods.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't, you know. I mean, just look at Earth, you know, Chinese, Norse, Romans, et cetera, et cetera. is you have different cultures that are separated by thousands of miles worshiping different gods. Who's to say that all those gods don't exist or aren't the same gods, you know?
And worlds like Forgotten Realms has tons of deities.
Yeah.
Sometimes new deities come into existence. And you need to kind of touch on that. Is it possible for new deities to exist? Are they all one deity? Are they different deities?
How are deities created?
How are deities created? Have they always been there? Are they infinitely powerful? Are they not infinitely powerful? How do they interact with the world? It will come to a point when you let a deity intercede on the player's behalf. And the question comes up, well,
that happens a lot. I've had that happen a lot in the D&D game, especially if you're playing a character that is God-based, you know, it's like you were a paladin, you're a cleric. You pray to your god for some intervention, and if it doesn't happen, you know, I mean, the players get, I've had players get a little pissed off when it doesn't happen. It's like, well, I prayed to my god, aren't I important enough? It's like, well, understand this, your god is, you know, part of the celestial clockwork of the universe. They're not going to pay attention to everything, or if they are, you know, is your god going to say, well, this, you're asking me this pitiful little question here, I'm not going to take the time out of my very busy schedule to answer it.
And on the other extreme, if you do allow a god to answer something, next time that same type of thing comes up, you have to be ready as a GM
to respond.
To respond why.
Well, it's because in your game, Nathan, with Jess, there was one point when I was in prison and I asked for a sign, basically, from my deity whether or not it would be all right for me to be busted out of jail, mm-hmm. you know, and that was just me as a player. Well, I want to make sure this is going to be cool with my deity,
and those are little things.
See, the thing is the major thing that my players don't really realize is they call to their gods, and in my game settings, it's epic the way the story goes. When the gods respond to them, they should realize just how much trouble they are actually in when the gods are going.
Yeah, we have to actually...
And looking right at them.
Yeah, when a god...
That's not a good sign.
When a god is looking at you either to help you or not... The problem is, and this is something that I've tried to make clear, maybe not always, but I try to make it as clear. If your god helps you, there's a very good chance that a god that's opposed to him now notices your existence.
That's not necessarily a good thing. Yeah.
If your god comes down and saves you from the demon, well, that demon's god or an evil priest suddenly notices that much influence. We're not talking about little things. We're not talking maybe a minor blessing. We're talking like suddenly you become the avatar. You know, major things that stick out. Well, guess what? All the deities that oppose that
It's not all just good things that come down on you. It can be bad stuff,
too. One thing that I enjoy is letting players realize that using the gods' names and curses sometimes gets their attention. If you sit there and use one of my evil deities' names enough times, you may piss her and or one of her followers off, and she may take notice, and bad things will happen.
And a blizzard will show up out of nowhere. Yeah.
In the middle of spring, it lasts for like 4 days.
Great.
Yeah, I remember that. That was nasty.
And that's, you know, that's something to play on. You know, just say, now, if a player tries to turn that to their advantage, don't let them do that.
Yeah, bend it.
Bend it.
You're the god. You're the GM. Yeah, the god of the game.
If it happens once, you know, where they get their thing. If they start relying on it too much, that's where it starts becoming a problem.
I mean, when I play a priest, I expect my deity to at least know of my existence.
Right.
And I do expect at times for minor signs. That's something. And when it comes to an epic battle, if it gets to the point where my spells are useless and I'm showing enough faith and I make the proper checks and things, I do expect some things.
Right.
You expect help.
but it's a fine line, though, of crossing that into the Deus Ex Machina thing where, you know, your god comes down and fixes everything.
Yeah.
We don't want that. I mean, as a GM, you don't want to do that because that's just bad game, you know.
And as a god...
It might happen once,
but
if it becomes, again, if it becomes habit, that's just bad.
And as a god, the god has to look at it again. If he fixes this, people are going to be watching. Divine entities are going to be watching. He may not want to be watching.
Right.
It's a lot easier to go through mortal followers, no matter how powerful they are.
And one thing I've noticed with D&D that they do is they don't have... Well, it tries to go more towards the... It goes towards the polytheistic pantheon, but it doesn't go towards the Greek and Roman, where you have a king, or Greek, Roman, and Norse even, where you have a king of the gods, like Zeus,
Odin, etc. It depends on the campaign.
I find that just interesting that they don't do that.
They don't do it.
And a lot of people don't think of it like in that light, even though, I mean, we've all read the Greek myths.
But that will reflect on society, too, though.
Iliad.
That'll reflect on society, because, well, you had a king of the gods, so therefore you had to have kings of, I mean, it turns into a very medieval setting. So, not to mention, it's a lot neater to have a priest and make a knowledge religion check or something, and then you're able to pull up, well, this god did this such and such quest, and therefore, you know, was able to capture the sun, and, you know, it's neat having the story behind it. And it just adds to the game. Now, how much of that do you want? Same with mythology. Mythology is the same way. Now, if you are going to have religion, one thing you need to do is talk to your players, because I played in a Ravenloft game, which was very...
fatalistic?
No. Let me finish. The religion was very close to Earth, in the sense of basically the people in this little area worship God, and it was the priests of God versus like the evil entities. And unfortunately, I was bothered. And I was bothered because one of the players was actually handed an exorcism book and was using prayer stuff from that. Personally, that bothered me. It bothered me a lot.
That would bother me. I'm not even religious.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got to be careful. If you use, and I'm talking about if you use anything from real life, in the sense of real life religion, be very careful with that. Make sure your players aren't, one, offended, or two, bothered by it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it messes up the game.
I mean, yeah, you want to know how important you are, how deep you want to go into the religion. I mean, does your religion have a Bible in and of itself? I mean, and if it does, are you going to want to write some of it, you know, so the players know it?
Keep it fantasy and keep it away from
a real style Bible.
I mean, you can play on Earth. You can play on Earth and have, you know, divine entities and stuff, and that can be fun. Just make sure your players are comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm. And going into world building with this is when you're making a society, you're making a culture on your planet or your world. How religious are they going to be? You know, I mean, are they predominantly the race worship one deity, worship a series of deities? Do they worship like any deity they want?
Are they monotheistic? Are they polytheistic?
Right.
Are they monotheistic in the sense of they have one deity, but they accept the existence of other entities? I know that sounds odd.
Right.
Monotheistic with the possibility of polytheism.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or do they just say these other deities are just demons and they're not really important?
Or heathen.
Or are they heathen? They don't really worship anything. But then you have to explain things like, where do they get their magical power?
What if they don't?
Well, maybe they don't. That's another thing. But we also have to look at religion. No matter what, even in our society, religion has modified society, and in a lot of ways would modify society even more in a fantasy world.
Yeah,
if you're from a little village where a long time ago the god of war came down in avatar form and saved your village from orc invasion, well, guess what? That's going to affect you.
Yeah.
No matter what the state religion is, you're going to be affected. Your whole religion, your whole society is going to be affected, whether the rest of the world knows about it or not. You might turn your whole place into a giant temple, or you may worship only this god, or you may give your children over to this god.
Let's say look at it sort of like this, as if you're playing in a world where someone says, hey, I spoke to the gods last night, what's the reaction of that community going to be? It's going to be, well, burn him, he's a witch, or be like, oh, hey, well, that's cool.
Or will they
how's Palor hanging today, you know what I mean? Well,
are they going to ask the question, do you mean you actually spoke to them, or are you just a priest?
Right.
They speak to their deity every time they pray.
Right, right.
As do normal people, but there's a difference between that and our epic level characters running up to Palor and going, hey, what's up?
Right.
Which we've got.
I mean, you want to have it be, oh, the gods work in mysterious ways, or do you have the hand of one of the gods comes down and, you know, turns over your spilled teacup.
Do you want gods for everything, or only the major things?
Yeah. It's like in Talos. The elves believe in gods. There are gods for every little thing, and they make and they are discovering new gods every day. It's like there's, oh hey, I discovered there's a god today for jumping up and down on the bed, or there's a god for, you know, cocktail napkins, things like that. No, seriously, that's how it works.
Oh, and if that wouldn't work in my world,
right?
In my world, they'd be like, no. But does it work for that? And maybe it's not that it's true. Maybe it's just because a society says that.
Well, then there was your whole god of cat piss thing.
Yeah, that was pretty funny, though. That's different. That's just because the GM gave me something and then didn't put rules to it. And then turned around and did put rules to it way too late.
It was too late by that point.
But I had a whole plan, and I would have taken over everything.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, with another thing, D&D always sort of amazed me. Is they don't have a god of love.
Yeah,
so I added one. Because, like, oh, come on. I know we're all a bunch of, you know, generally a bunch of guys who don't want to deal with that sort of thing, but it's like...
But sorry, the world has love in it.
Yeah, world has love. Deal with it.
Now, they do, I mean, they did... We're just talking about, there's a difference between the normal D&D deities, but then they do touch upon the Greek and the Norse gods.
Yeah.
It's just not a lot of worlds, normal worlds do that. So, it kind of depends, I mean...
Well, like in your world, how, I mean, sort of go over in your world how important the deities are.
Well, in my world, the deities are incredibly important. You've got the older deities who, yes, they don't have to watch over everything because life will still carry on. But, for example, one deity, Andradia, has tied herself to the land and an empire so securely that while in some ways she has lost some divine ability, she also has gained more because if her country actually expands in power, she gains more power. So there's a whole empire who, while they pay some lip service to other deities, they worship Andradia. She is the main goddess. She, when a new emperor is chosen for Andradia, there is a knight, the first knight, and if Andradia visits that emperor, then that emperor is blessed, and his reign will be long and secure and fulfilling and such. If not, well, then she has not blessed this union, and therefore things may not go as well.
You may get assassinated on the third day.
But my deities also have a god of war. You have, you know, god of love. You have all the major aspects. But then you also have lesser deities, because I always follow the whole idea that, yes, you might have these entities, but guess what? They have families. They have children. And...
The
gods themselves. And sometimes it's with mortals.
More humanizing.
Yeah. I mean, the gods are super powerful, but they still have feelings. They have emotions. Not to mention that makes it pretty funny if you do somehow piss off a god or insult a god. You might be minuscule, but if you know the right buttons, you may piss off a god. You may even make a god sad. You're stupid, obviously.
Well, yeah.
But it's a possibility. I like looking at the Greek way and saying, well, yes, my gods aren't as petty. My gods are a lot nicer. But at the same time, I do have the Roman gods on my world.
Right.
They do exist. And they are a lot pettier than mine. But then I throw in other things. There are things that the gods don't understand. Like, the gods know that there is a wellspring of souls, and they can take souls from that wellspring and do what they wish, but there's a quota on what they can do. And there's an entity that defends this spring that can actually just say, no, you don't get any. And the gods can't do anything. Also, the gods don't actually know...
So there are beings above the gods.
Yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera. Brings up an interesting point is how important is the soul in a game?
That's,
you know?
That's incredibly important.
I mean,
how are you going to do that?
That's just a strange question of itself, you know. I mean
some players like knowing that when their hero dies, there is a nice place for them to go,
or a bad place if they're
place if they're evil. Right. I played in one game where when you died, your soul went to this place, and you stood in line, And then when you got to the end of the line, this deity who had gone insane ate you. You went into oblivion. I personally hated that. I thought it was stupid.
Well, yeah.
I thought it was depressing, and I don't like
it. It's like Wraith the Oblivion. You die, and you become a pencil.
And
a pencil?
Some players...
It's one of the things... If you've read Wraith the Oblivion, one of the things that can happen in Wraith is running around in the afterlife, you could get caught and drawn into this sort of this forge foundry place where they take your soul and they make you into an inanimate object. It's like, hi, I'm Ethan. I'm a happy dead person. It's Wraith. I'm an unhappy dead person. And oh, hey, what's in here? Oh, I'm being melted down into a pencil, and I'm a pencil, and I've always been a pencil. There's a reason why Wraith isn't published anymore.
Because it sounds like an awful
Smurf
setting.
Yeah, definitely a Smurfy setting.
Some players because we don't know what will happen in our real lives, so when you play a game, some people like to know. And I've had players that...
And that goes into how in-depth you want to go. When you talk to your players, do they want to think about this? You know, it's like when you die, well, what's going to happen?
And some players want to know that. They want to know that if I follow this deity, this is what's going to happen. And therefore, you have to have that created. Whether it's just a stencil of this is the divine paradise, then we get into things like, and I personally think the soul for a setting is very important. I'm working on a lot of stuff for my world, whether it'll come up for the players or not, that's not the point. The point is to kind of add depth. Not to mention, it's kind of interesting when you cast a spell, because if you cast a spell that destroys somebody's soul, well, to me, that's horrible. In some societies or some games, it might not be as evil because it might not be important. But that does, I mean, I think that you have to figure out where you want to put that. What happens when the players visit the godly realms? Can they visit the godly realms?
They burst into fire and die.
Well, okay, so in Nathan's realm, they burst into fire and die. But how about the places where they don't burst into fire and die? You have to have something written to... show the...
I mean, in your world, Nathan, how do you look at the gods?
Well, the gods are pretty much the... Whereas the gods can influence and they can assist, the gods actually have no physical capability. They can't. They don't have avatars. They can't so go, you, my avatar, go down there and
they're
assist
more,
them.
They're more an idea than a physical
that's
being.
That's how they're created.
Right.
Look like how gods
the collective,
go
through the collective
when people
faith
begin
of,
to believe in something.
That's interesting.
Like a god is like, oh, I believe that there's a god of cement, right? And that person begins to get people to follow him. That belief builds, and as that belief builds,
creates,
a god of cement is created.
Is created, okay.
And then as the faith
there's no physical
grow,
representation of the god, it's just the god is an idea.
The god starts off as an idea, and based on people's belief in that idea, it gives that god its actual substance. But the gods have no actual physical capabilities on earth. They can give gifts to assist. They will help player. If they notice a player and the player is begging for help, they may help that player, which is not necessarily a good thing, because if the god is looking at you, that means you're in serious, serious need.
Mm-hmm.
Which means either
one, good or bad,
coming,
right?
You're coming across something that's not going to be very pleasant,
mm-hmm.
or two, they've decided that you're going to be their basically... they're a person who spreads their faith even more. So they're like, okay, I've done this for you, now you've got to go do this for me.
I had an avatar of one of my deities that a player visited on the planet itself. And there was some stuff going on. And
that brat
asked,
child?
No. They were talking about, well, what happens if we fail in this quest? And this particular deity stated it quite simply. He said, we don't need you. We may lose power, but we are forever. And we may disappear and you may forget our names, but we will always be here.
Yeah. See,
that's how I go about it. Basically, with the deities, if you worship them, they gain more power.
Mm-hmm.
They want worship. But if you forget about them,
they don't go away.
They don't go away. They just lose that particular pump.
See, that's where I got my idea of how my gods were created is from a wonderful book written by Terry Pratchett called Small Gods.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about that in the book. And this god that used to be a great, powerful god that everybody's forgotten about basically has shrunk down to the point where he's just a small, insignificant turtle. And it's a great book if you haven't read it. You know, Terry Pratchett's got that witticism about him. But I like the idea that, you know, there may never have been a god of cheese until someone said, there's got to be, you know, there's this god of cheese. He does all this stuff for us. And then suddenly this idea starts to float around and more people start to support it with their faith. And suddenly there's a god of cheese. He's like,
Neil Gaiman does American Gods. And I know Ethan doesn't like Neil Gaiman. But American Gods.
Yeah, I'm a heretic or something because I love comics. And I can't stand Neil Gaiman.
Okay, he's got Sandman,
But have you read American Gods?
Yeah, I tried.
You tried? Okay.
I made it about halfway through the book and stopped because I hated it.
I loved American Gods. I loved the concept behind it. I loved how you had these deities who, again, it was the concept that brought them into existence from wherever. Mm-hmm. But as time went on, they lost a lot of their power because, like, the Egyptians' gods were in, I think it was a Mississippi town. I don't remember exactly what town. And one of them, Bastet. She was a cat who could turn into a human once in a while. The other two Egyptian deities, Anubis and the crane one, I always forget his name.
Thoth.
Yes. They were undertakers. And the thing was, if you saw them in the divine realm, they were the mighty, powerful gods. But when you went into the real world, they were just these human-type entities with a lot of power. Which was also neat, though, there was multiples of them. So in the Norse region of the world, there was an Odin. But in America, there was an Odin. And the reason why is because the people brought their faith. Now, the Odin in one area was basically destroyed or dissipated, but in the other area, he was still there. And also, their personalities were different. He's like, I'm Odin, but I'm this people's Odin. They were this person's Odin. Odin's, excuse me.
That sounds interesting, but I don't really care for Neil Gaiman, so.
I just like the idea. I mean, I personally like the book, but I like
the idea is interesting. I just didn't like the book. So.
I just liked how, basically, it was kind of like what you were saying. But these entities existed. They walked around. They did things.
And that's adapting it for a modern day.
Yeah, and they were feeding, like, Loki. Loki was, he started out as, he was in prison with the main character. Then he was the driver. And then he was something else. And Loki's whole thing was, he was going to feed on the chaos.
The main character was causing.
And everybody else was causing.
Yeah.
Actually,
moving into the future is Snow Crash. Talks about it talks more like the Sumerian gods, Enki and stuff, and actually adapts that towards a cyberpunk setting, which was very interesting. And I highly recommend that book to anybody.
It is very tough to read, though. It's all done in present tense.
Good book.
You have to get used to it.
Yeah, you do get used to it, but it's a very good book. I love that.
Maybe we should move away from the gods per se and go to myths.
Mythology?
Because mythology is less important.
Mythology is one of those kind of...
This town needs an enema.
All aboard! All aboard the Orient Express!
London. Paris.
Sofia. Milan.
Venice.
Constantinople.
Yogg-Sothoth.com presents Horror on the Orient Express. A role-playing adventure from Chaosium, featuring award-winning role-players from an award-winning website.
May I introduce the MPK-45, one of our newest machine pistols. My company makes these, you know.
Fine. Will it stop one of these?
Ah!
Recorded in CD quality.
In binaural surround sound.
Horror on the Orient Express. A classic campaign for Call of Cthulhu. Coming in 2007 from Yogg-Sothoth.com.
Ah, hello, hello. Welcome, welcome to the dungeon.
Well, we're back from our wonderful messages there, and we're here with another installment of the three-parter. Today on the three-parter, Nathan's going to give us some character.
What little character I have?
Exactly. I'm going to give us a nice little rant or a rave or some such, and then Jeremy has a review for us. And Jeremy's going to throw something at me now. So we're going to go ahead and start off with We've Got Character.
We've Got Character.
In an old setting of a D&D game I ran, there was the father of one of the characters. His name was Boris. He was a dwarf, been married for a long time, and had this peculiar habit of wearing a pot on his head. Players were always questioning this until they met the player character's mother, who decided that the only way to get through to her husband, is to throw very large, heavy, blunt objects at his head. He had a helmet, but he found out very quickly that helmets weren't built to enough strength to withstand the force of her throw. So he found a pot to do it for him. This character was very important because he was the second in line to become king at the in the local dwarven city.
I hope he has brain damage.
Yeah, unfortunately, as you can tell from the pot helmet, obviously he's a little lost on the head due to all the damage his wife had done to him, which quickly it helps the players understand where the character, who these were the parents of, why he was a little bit off, because that was his mother's way of getting the attention of any of her children. Yeah, apparently they'd had like 5 children, 2 lived. So, the father played a pivotal role in actually getting the characters a chance to speak to the king, who they needed to speak to get permission to travel into the Undermines to deal with a problem of a dragon, actually.
Dragon.
Yep. And unfortunately, he had a lot of things that he wanted done before getting them their help. It was kind of like, since it was an early D&D run for me, it was actually a lot like how you do quests in like World of Warcraft. Go to point A, grab item B. It was very simple. So it was a very simple quest. But the character quickly developed some strange quirks along the lines of developing something along the lines of turrets because of all the mental damage that had been done to him from flying objects. His son had bought him several helmets in the past. Unfortunately, they were usually laying on the floor with dents in them or chunks missing from the sidearm from his wife. And unfortunately, when the NPC was actually helping the characters talk to the king, he kind of burst into a bout of his Tourette syndrome. Ended up getting all the player characters thrown in the dungeon. But yeah, the character was really well liked, even though he was a jackass. I'll probably will use him again at some point in time,
well, yeah,
just to torture my players.
His fault.
Well, the king doesn't know that. The king had no idea. You have to understand that the king
no,
had no
I'm
idea that his second.
He's a jackass.
Yeah. Oh no, he was a jackass outside
that
as well. Yeah, like go grab me my beer. It's right over there. I'm not getting up. Son of a bitch!
I would have invested in a magic pot for his head personally if he was my pot.
Yeah, well, his son couldn't afford that. His son was poor.
But he wasn't working hard enough.
Well, they were trying, but all their money that they kept making ended up getting stolen. Because they get into horrible conflicts with like mages and stuff, and the mages get all mad and hold person on and then rob them and leave.
I gotta remember that one. Oh, so you're gonna attack me?
Hold person.
Let's see what's in your pockets. I'll take that. I'm gonna take your pants.
Yeah, it was bad.
And we're gonna cover your honey and let loose the bears.
Yeah, I was really mean to my players. It was like the 4th game I had GM'd. Give me a break.
So you decided to torture them?
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
I mean, I had players that would go with it and stride.
It's in the bylaws.
Yeah, it's in the bylaws. The fourth campaign you ever run, you have to torture your players terribly in it.
Going by that, then my next D&D campaign should be fine. Then the one after that, I'll have to torture you all.
Yeah.
In. Okay.
I will use him again because actually the next D&D campaign coming up will be the next 4th campaign. I might throw him in there.
Oh, so in our current campaign, we're not being tortured. I see.
No, God, I'm not being mean to you guys at all. I just unleashed the world, a bunch of dragons on the world that weren't thought to have existed.
Thanks.
You guys have no way of knowing how to deal with yet.
Yeah, thanks, Nathan.
That's not torture, but the last part of this game session campaign, the third and final book, is the next 4th session, which, guess what that means?
Mm.
Yeah, you guys are in trouble.
I gotta remember which session I started on and figure out every 4th.
Great.
Oh, wait, I just keep the torture going nonstop.
Yeah, you do.
Thanks, Nathan.
You're welcome.
But yeah, I'll probably bring
him. I will have to remember that whole person.
He's hilarious.
That whole person robbing deal. That would be a great.
Mages casting whole person and robbing.
Bandits go, we're not going to kill you. We're just going to steal your stuff.
Why don't you stand there and look at me? Yeah, I was nasty. But the players had this habit of picking on everybody. It's just like, you run into a level 15 mage and like, we're going to kick your ass. She goes, whole person. Well, now that you can't do anything for the next few minutes,
I'm going to draw on your face with this crayon.
Let's go ahead and take your backpack. What's that? All your food's in here? Oh, darn. I guess I'll leave you one ration. I'm going to take your bag and go. Oh, what's
and
that?
Licks it
door.
And puts it back in.
Yeah.
I'm going to take one boot.
I was never anything that bad. Well, but that's my character, Forrest, which is actually where I got the name for my cat.
The rant.
Well, my rant today is a simple one. I'll pick it off my list here.
You have a list of them?
I have list of rants, yes, yes.
I do too, at home.
Organize my ideas, deal with it and stuff. My rant today is about character histories.
Oh boy.
The GM asks you to put a little thought in your character and to come up with some background, friends, family, what's his day job, where does he come from, what's his motivation, etc., etc., etc. How many times can one player play a character who has, my family is dead, I have no friends, my life is miserable, there is nothing that can bad can happen to my people, my friends, my family, because I don't have any.
Wow.
In every single game, whether it be a fantasy game, a sci-fi game, a modern-day game, superhero, it doesn't matter. Oh, I'm an orphan. My family was horribly murdered in front of me, so I know they're dead. I was horribly scarred and went through years of therapy, and now I'm fine. And my therapist fell into a tank of acid one day and burned into tiny little bits in front of me. So I know he's dead. But I was fine with it, because I learned from him to let go of such things.
I work from home, so I don't have to talk to people.
I work from home, so I have no coworkers.
I don't have a phone number.
I don't talk to my landlord. I pay with an electronic check.
Everything's taken directly out of my bank account.
I have direct deposit.
I don't have a pet.
Exactly. How many times can you deal with this? When you're making character history, try to do something original and not do something stupid like that. Just because a GM someday, somewhere in the past, may have used such things against you, doesn't mean you should deprive the GM of such wonderful things in the future. Not that the GM will do that.
No,
there's a possibility. But it gets kind of ridiculous and monotonous and retarded.
Because they won't group. If they have no friends, they're not...
Exactly.
They're so antisocial, they won't work with anybody. Which is why there's always that one person, and you know who I'm talking about, that whenever he's in my game, I basically have to kick him in the nuts to get him to go with the group.
But sometimes it's even better when the GM just kills all your friends and family in front
of
you. So you don't have to worry about it anyway.
That's fun.
I love doing that because it's...
But, you know, you wouldn't have
character.
To do that if the players actually got into the game.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, if they're
actually
like,
had
wow.
some attachment to their character
I
and actually...
Door.
Oh, wait, paid attention.
I'm sorry,
or
what?
Tried to work with you when you're trying to get the party together.
I'm sorry, what were you talking about? I wasn't paying attention.
Or read the character
I'm
handout.
I'm going to string you up with piano wire.
Read the character handout with the family members
piano
on
piano wire.
Yeah. Like, guess what? You have an uncle. But no, you have an uncle. But, uncle.
It's in the
well, I never talked about you have an uncle.
That was cool, dude. I had an uncle. You're the one that decided my family should have been killed off anyways. In that
yeah, I know.
Meet and Masterminds game.
That's
fine. I was like, but I gotta have somebody.
You should have some sort of character.
Yeah, and what did you do to my uncle? You kidnapped him, you bastard!
Yeah, but
it was great.
I didn't kill him.
No.
He was kidnapped, but I didn't kill him.
We had to search for him to find him.
Yes, you did.
And it was very close to the...
See, it's not always bad.
It was
you don't always horribly murder your friends.
That's why I always make a cool character history for all my characters and try to include as many friends and family members as possible just so the GM can look at it and go, hey, I'm going to so screw with this
it's
guy.
It's sometimes nice when they have a family, so at between games, if they want to have some role-playing downtime, they can go back to the family.
Yeah, and see their family, yes. You don't even have to mess with them as a GM.
You can just let them have it.
Yeah, it just gets annoying when players just always pull that, I'm the lone wolf, raised in the wild by wolves thing, you know, it gets
annoying.
Well,
there
annoying.
You go. Ask them who their wolf parents and
slaughter them right in front of them because, you know, they're purging wolves out of the area because they eat all the
cows. Which pelt is your wolf mother? This one? Is this
brother! One? That pelt looks familiar. Oh, God, that's my brother!
We're terrible.
Yes, we are.
Those boots that you bought, you notice, you look a little bit closer, that's your mom's pelt you're wearing, you
bastard.
You sick freak.
Yep. That's
I didn't
right.
know. I didn't know.
Now you do.
Oh, Jeremy, give us a review.
Okay.
The review.
Well, I was going to review Ravenloft, but I'm going to wait.
Yeah, we've already had one blast to our sanity this.
But since we did talk about Divine, I'm going to review a nice older book.
Good book, though.
Deities and Demigods, put out by WotC. This was their 3.0 version.
There is not a 3.5 version.
Not yet.
Exactly. They did some updates
not
I believe,
unless
on their
they
system.
The Complete God or something.
It's done like by Rich Redman, Skip Williams, and James White. I really like the artwork on the outside. This was back when they were doing the tome looks like a tome.
They still do that with a lot of books.
Yeah, they do. Off and on. And unlike the second edition one, which I enjoyed the second edition one.
The second one was awesome.
It had some, maybe we'll review that one at some point, but that one had Aztec deities and
that's the one I've read.
But
I haven't read this one.
This starts off with some of the divine powers, different ranks. It's all definitely WotC, you know, it's colored. It was a bit expensive at the time. It was
$30.
$30. Then it goes into the D&D Pantheon. And
it was one of the first WotC supplements out, I think.
Yes, it was.
It gives
the third, there was the third book.
It gives the cosmology. And remember, D&D, their normal cosmology is based around alignment. It talks about the different deities in their pantheon. It gives their stats, if you want to use those. That's another argument. It gives some of the shrines. Now, when I'm looking at the artwork on some of it, some of the artwork is neat, but some of it is not so good. I'm looking at the creator of the elves, Corellian Lorithian, and I hate that picture. There's just something unfortunate about this poor elf. I'm not sure if he's suffering from maybe the plague or...
I think he's supposed to be a woman.
Except he's a male, so...
Got
some of the artwork could have been better. But as we go on, we then get into the Olympian deities, which is nice. I actually enjoyed that. Then it also goes into the Norse deities and the Egyptian deities. So they did cover quite a few. And then what I think is neat at the end, it talks about some different things you could do, such as maybe having... like the faith of the sun, a monotheistic religion, or, excuse me, you could also have like a dualistic religion, and it just gives some examples and some prestige classes. Now, I still use this book. My book is very well, you know, it's been in my backpack a lot. I follow some of the, how they write the deities up, I still follow this basic setup. I like how they have the name. For example, Grumsh. Well, I don't use this particular deity, but Grumsh, then it shows his nickname or another name. One Eye, He Who Never Sleeps. It gives his deity level. He's a greater deity. his symbol, his home plane, his alignment, his portfolio, his worshippers, his cleric alignment, domains, favored weapon. Gives a description, a dogma, clergy and temples. I like all that. That's very simple. One thing I added to it is paladins. That's just a simple question. Do they have paladins or not? I'm not talking about lawful good paladins necessarily. I'm just talking about paladins or holy warriors. And I've been using this type of setup. But this book, I really recommend it. It gives you some ideas, especially if you're just starting out. I know it's only 3.0, but it will work. You don't even have to worry about the stats. Just if you want your deities in here and you just don't want to, if you don't have time or you don't want to come up with other deities, just use the ones out of this book. They work. So you can pick this up used, actually, either online or at half-off bookstore or local gaming store. I bet you can find this used. So, please.
It is a good book for the, but the thing, my thing with it is it's all you've got. It's all we've got, pretty much. It could stand a revision, because it was a book that was put out pretty early in the 3.0 run, and it was sort of before they sort of found their rhythm with it, so it's lacking a good section on that gives you a good idea of how to create a god and things like that. It's not really laid out too well, in my opinion.
Luckily,
it's not laid out to actually teach or really help you create a god. It's actually laid out for you to have gods to use.
Luckily for me, since I've been doing this a while, I was able to take it and use it for my advantage. But for a new, I could see it could cause problems for a new person who's starting out.
But I'd like to see a revised edition.
A revised edition would be nice.
Yeah.
I would like to see the Aztec deities added back in there.
Like I said, I haven't actually read this one.
And
the
also
last one was incredible.
They talk about, I can't remember those other, the Grey Mouser deities, I think, were in the old school one.
Get your hand on it.
I'm not sure about that one, but I seem to remember reading something about the Grey Mouser or the deities.
Yeah, I don't know about that one.
I have no idea. Never played much second ed.
But either way,
I don't remember. I just remember the Aztec gods because they had like the Jaguar god.
I find this one is useful. It could be revised. And that's it. That's all I got.
And like the Schottel and stuff like that. It was just awesome. Had all those unpronounceable names.
Actually, if you wanted to pick up the second edition one, just to use for ideas, hey, go for it.
Yeah. I'm sure you can find that very cheap in most places. If not, you can also just get the PDF of it off Paizo. I'll put a link for it on the in the show notes.
Mm-hmm. Paizo has it?
Mm-hmm. They have all the old second edition stuff.
How expensive is it?
No idea.
Put down your weapon. You have 20 seconds to comply.
International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I never look at the big picture because I can't stand watching horror movies.
I try to avoid sitting here thinking of what to say next. I like to make it off the cuff, spontaneous. It doesn't work.
All I want now, and all I ever really wanted ever since I was a little kid, is total omnipotence. Is that too much to ask?
I could even get out on a limb of wild speculation. I know, pretty odd thing to do for this podcast. I could fit your brain in a hollow pea, I swear. That's just two clear cuts, two black and white. It's all point of view, don't you understand? It's point of view.
Oh, man! Every other podcast is better than mine!
That's enough. Whining time is over.
No doubt, if you were paying attention, you detected a minor tinge of paranoia.
But this is supposed to be fun. I'm supposed to be doing this for fun. And if it means exhibiting false enthusiasm, I'm not above that. So, I'm just going to apologize now and let's move on. So what specifically are you worried about, Adam? You would probably want to grab me around the neck with your arm and pull my head off. Did that make any sense?
Well, I don't know about you, but I am planning to scream and run.
Whew, what can I say? It's been a long, long 2 weeks. I'm sorry about the delay on this episode, but I would say, at least for the month of April, you might have to get used to this being a little spotted, because our resident co-host Nathan is actually getting married this month on April 21st, so be sure to send him an email or call in and give him his give best wishes. He's getting married to his sweetheart, and he's a very lucky man. We do have some feedback to actually look at, but I want to wait until I get the whole crew together for it. So we have something off the forums, plus I got an email from somebody about a student film, pulp project they're doing, and I'd rather do that justice and actually give a whole segment to it. So, no real random encounters this week. Just some quick news. We want to give a shout out to Does My Geek Look Big in This, because it looks like they have closed their podcasting doors, sadly. They were a great show, and we will definitely miss them very much. Now they are the sister podcast of Fistful of Comics and Games, our web host, basically. And we love Fistful of Comics very much. Our website, actually, address is officially changed. We're still part of the Fistful of Comics. You can still get to us through CanadianCrusaders.fistfulofcomics.com. Or through the old links, but we also now have www.canadiancrusaders.com as well. So, a bit easier to remember, but we're always hopefully going to be a member of the Fistful of Comics. We love those guys. I'm going to stop rambling on and just get to our how to contact us and end up the show. So we are going to do that, and I'll see you guys next week or whenever possibly I can get the next show out. So thanks for your patience, guys. Also, on a quick note, want to let you know that our voicemail line has changed because I kind of let it slip for 30 days. It's now 206-338-2414. So that's been updated on the website and will be updated in the brand new How to Contact Us segment. So take a listen.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.
You can visit our website at www.canadiancrusaders.com. You can leave us an audio, call or voicemail line at 206-338-2414. Visit us on the Frapper map, send us an email, or go by the forums on Fistful of Comics, or go to our website and click on the forums link to get to the forums, and leave us a message there, and we'll get back to you absolutely as soon as we can. Thanks for listening. Gamers Haven Podcast is released under a Creative Commons, non-commercial, attribution, share-alike 2.5 license, and is a proud member of the Fistful of Comics podcast audio group. And if you swallow the drug, you'll be fast to die. There's a new sheriff in town, but he's all alone. So you're in the dark. Streets of fire. Favorite bullets and blood. Before I hit the outtakes, I want to warn you, some of the outtakes get kind of, well, inappropriate, just to give you fair warning. So if you don't like, swearing or any of that weird stuff, just stop listening right about now. Yeah.
Take
walk 5 feet that way to talk to the guy and deliver the letter.
Yeah, grab him his beer.
Or if you can't walk, no, you need to walk over there. But it's like two feet.
Oh. I can't walk that far. You son of a bitch.
or the ones that would like go deliver this letter to this guy over there, then you go back, go tell them this, and then you go back and say, go tell them that. Like, I'm just going to shove both of you in the same room in a minute.
They are simple, though.
Do you have a review?
Yeah, I do.
I think we're still reeling from last week's Call of Cthulhu review. We're all kind of still in the sanity blasted area.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
We're going to break the recorder if we keep drinking.
Something more along the lines of something like Angus Day.
I need that head!
It's more like this. Cthulhu is eating my head.
Being digested by Cthulhu.
Angus Day.
Angus Day.
Opus Day?
Or Code Monkey.
Code Monkey like Tab and Mountain Dew.
Code Monkey like...
And
pretty much fits with my cat too, doesn't it?
He wears a metal pot on his head.
He should, as much as I kick him, around. Yeah, in case you can't tell, I torture my cat. You can like see his ribs. You know, he's never fed.
He's
never
petted. Horribly
disfigured. Yes.
Yeah, terribly mistreated cat.
That's why you got another one.
Yeah, that's why we have another one. Who's Oh, we never feed her either. You can count her ribs. She's always howling at the door because she wants to escape from our terrible existence.
She's called me multiple times.
Yeah.
Save me!
Yep.
Or kill me, Mishka. Please.
Pig.
He's supposed to be a male, but anyway, moving on.
he's got boobs, people.
Some of the artwork could have been better.
His bitch tits?